If you like the Live Wild podcast and enjoy hunting-related apparel, I've got you covered. I just launched some great t-shirts, hats, and sweatshirts under my own Live Wild brand. You can find them now on my website, remywarren.com. I just want to say thanks again, everyone, for all the support, and I really hope you enjoy these designs as much as I do. Who knows? Maybe you'll head over to my website and find your next lucky hat. I'm Remy Warren, and I've lived my life in the wild. As a professional guide and hunter, I've spent thousands of days perfecting my craft. I want to give that knowledge to you. In this podcast, we relive some of my past adventures as I give you practical hunting tips to make you more successful. Whether you're just getting started or a lifelong hunter, this podcast will bring you along on the hunt and teach you how to live wild. This podcast is brought to you by Mountain Tough and Yeti. A lot of the tactics I talk about here require you to be in top physical shape, so I partnered with Mountain Tough to help get you ready for the mountain. With their science-based, hunter-specific training app, you'll get in shape and mentally tough, able to tackle any hunt. Because we really believe this will help you be more successful, as a listener to this podcast, we're giving you 6 free weeks to get you started. Just use code LIVEWILD. Hey, Live Wild listeners, I just wanted to let you know that I've got some awesome new designs on my Live Wild apparel, including a really cool elk graphic that's on some Yeti Yonder bottles, hats, and t-shirts. We've also got some other new stuff dropping as well, so if you're interested, go check it out at my website, remywarren.com, and just thank you guys so much for all the support. Welcome back to Live Wild Podcast, everyone. This week, we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to do a spring season check-in. And now, most of the stories and the things that I talk about are post-hunt. This week, I thought it'd be kind of fun to dive into a little bit of pre-hunt. So, actually, tomorrow morning, I fly out and I'm headed out up north of the Arctic Circle. It's going to take me about 2 days to get there to go on a muskox hunt. I've never hunted muskox. It's something that I think they're just a really cool animal. I'm planning on taking my bow. And so I thought this week, let's do a little behind the curtain look at the planning and prep for this adventure before I even go on it. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of my thoughts pre-hunt before I head north of the Arctic Circle. So tomorrow morning, I'm flying out on a muskox hunt. And when I think about, you're like, why a muskox? It's a hunt that I haven't done. And when I think about the list of hunts that I'd like to do that I've never experienced, muskox was actually really high on the list. And I had an opportunity to go with someone and decided to jump on it. But I think, you know, you think, well, there's a lot of other awesome things you could hunt. And for some reason, I think it's just, muskox, to me, are just one of the coolest animals. It's almost like, in my mind, seeing one is nearly akin to time travel. I mean, they're just so unique and so kind of prehistoric in a way. I think it's just going to be a cool experience. The other interesting thing about muskox is where they live. It is essentially like going back into the Ice Age, just going to a place that you're on frozen ocean, going into these islands of land is essentially where we're going to be hunting. And you're getting there via snow machine in what is still pretty wintry conditions. It's April right now, but up there it can be anywhere from 10 below to 60 below zero, especially with the wind chill. So there's a lot of considerations as far as warmth, survival in a way, and then going to a place where I've never been and hunting a species that I've never hunted. And so when I gear up for something like this, of course, a lot of it relies on the people that we're going with. So the hunt, in essence, is going to be conducted by Inuit guides. So local guys that are going to take us out on snow machine and show us how they do it. I think, you know, in my mind, when I'm thinking about this muskox hunt, you know, I thought about it in the past and I thought, oh, it'd be cool to hunt a muskox. But I really did not want to go up and do the whole snow machine thing and freeze my balls off for a hunt that, you know, it seemed like the animals, I think the stalking portion is not super difficult. However, the traveling and getting there portion, I think is kind of part of the journey, part of the adventure, going somewhere where very few people go. We're going to be very far north, north of the Arctic Circle. We're going to be out on the ice, essentially long ways away from civilization. And, you know, there's also that cultural element of going out with people that live in this kind of environment, and this is how they grew up doing something. This is where they live. That's always very interesting to me. So I'm actually really looking forward to this trip. I think it's kind of going to be fun to do this where I talk about the hunt pre-hunt. It's like right now, let's see, it's 11 p.m. I've got to head to the airport at 3 a.m. So by the time I record this, upload this podcast, it'll be like, I'll get a couple hours of sleep. This is not the way that I travel. A little look behind the curtain. It seems like every time I go on a big trip that I have to fly, I'm recording a podcast that night and through the night because I'm packing during the day and doing family stuff. And it's like, oh, I got to do a podcast for when I'm gone. So by the time you guys, it's like the look behind the curtain. By the time you guys hear this podcast, I'll probably actually just be getting back. Well, I will be. I will have gotten back. And then I'm planning on recording the kind of hunt wrap up, whether it'll be next week or a little bit later. I'm not sure. But the plan on the hunt is to do the hunt and also film the hunt. And there's some kind of interesting considerations filming a hunt like this because you're in a very cold environment. And one of the things about extreme cold environments is batteries, unfortunately, don't like it. I've been on some pretty cold hunts and done some filming in some cold weather, but there is that problem of batteries draining. And unfortunately, in this instance, there's no way to charge the battery. So you bring battery packs to charge your camera batteries, but those batteries also get drained by the cold. So there's a couple of techniques we've learned kind of from people that have done something similar before. Part of that is just keeping the batteries warm, using like a crossbody bag, fanny pack kind of things inside your layers to keep the batteries warm. Now, one of the other things when it's extremely cold like this is if we aren't going to have any way to warm up during the day, but there is like, we're going to be staying in what it seems like a sled pulled out plywood kind of contraption. And there should be some heat in there. I'm assuming that there is going to be some kind of kerosene heat or whatever they're using to heat it. But bringing the gear in from the cold to the hot is a sure way to break gear, especially a bow where you bring it in from the extreme cold, you bring it into the heat, it kind of sweats, it gets damp, then you bring it back out into the cold and then it ices up and freezes. So the plan is to leave the cameras outside so they don't fog up, bring the batteries in with us, but that'll be the only kind of real gear that's going into any warmth during this trip. And then the other thought is you are going to encounter or can potentially encounter some extreme cold conditions, especially with high winds or wind chill. You could go into that negative 50 range or even lower, but experiencing a hunt with those kind of temperatures, there's a lot of things kind of going through your head of like, okay, well, what am I going to pack? I've got, you know, I got a pretty good gear list going of the things that I'm packing, sleeping bag. One of the things is, as we go out on the hunt, we're going to bring everything that we need in case a snow machine breaks down and you're going to have to spend the night out on the ice or something like that. We've got everything we need. So we'll take our sleeping bags with us. We'll have our warm clothes. I've got a lot of foot warmers, hand warmers packed. As far as clothing goes, actually, I've got a new First Light jacket that I'm going to be field testing that's going to be coming out way in the future. It's kind of in the development process still, but field testing that. And then I've got some tried and true stuff. But really, I like to just say doubling down. I've got multiple layers of down as well as like a wind block layer. I'm going to wear as a base layer, First Light Kiln Merino hoodie. And then I'm going to wear a furnace hoodie over the top of that. Might even throw on like a Chalice fleece, which is a new, I think those are coming out pretty soon, because it's got a little bit of wind block, and then pop it some down on over that. Depending on And then on my bottoms, just like thermals, insulated pair of pants, and then probably some, you know, down puffer pants over the top of that. And then we'll also have access to kind of like a survival suit in a way where it's got, you know, like snowmobiling pants and parka that protects you from the wind, adds extra insulation depending on the weather. You know, I might have that on or might have that off, or depending on where we're driving, if it's something or it's like driving over ice. I would think that the ice is probably 10 feet thick still. So we aren't really too concerned about going through ice or anything like that. But there is always considerations like that in places where, you know, I'm not familiar with. Actually, when I was in Greenland, they gave us similar kind of survival suits because we were near the water. That was obviously a different time of year, but the water was cold. And so we'd wear these like survival bibs and jacket that if you, I don't know, fell off, got wet, you'd float. I don't know exactly what kind of gear we're going to have for this. I think it'd be a little bit different, but you know, they've definitely got like very insulated gloves. I'm wearing like all my insulated gloves plus throwing on some over mitts over the top of that. I've got my, you know, Schnee's pack boots, and then we've also got access to just some, like, I think they call them bunny boots, some just old school Mickey Mouse looking boots that are giant, that are rated for, I don't know, 50 below, something like that, maybe even colder temperatures than that. And then we'll throw some foot warmers in those. So I think the thing on this hunt and the challenge and the thing that's so different is you're going into an environment where you go, we're a long way away from anything, and it's going to be miserably cold. So because it's going to be so cold and you're wearing so many different layers of clothing, one of the things that I've been doing in preparation for this hunt is shooting with all that gear on, essentially. So getting used to drawing the bow, anchoring, and making sure that none of the sleeves of the puffy jacket hit the string, making sure that I can find my anchor point. It's actually quite a different shooting experience and kind of a takeaway from with something to think about if you're headed out on a cold hunt with a bow. So when you think about shooting, you know, right now I'm shooting in just a normal jacket. I draw back. I've got no gloves on. I've got my anchor point on my face. Everything's good. I make my shot. Well, I'm in this particular instance, I'm going to have ski goggles on, essentially probably two layers of face mask, like a baklava, and then some probably merino wool layer underneath that, probably a beanie on top of that or underneath that. And then I'm going to have four or five layers of jacket on. And so all of that kind of compounds what's hitting the string, where things are going, and makes it a lot more difficult to find that anchor point, feel that release, and make it feel the same as I do when I don't have all that gear on. So I've been practicing, you know, popping those goggles up, pulling down the face mask, finding that anchor point, shooting with a little bit of a glove on. I actually am using some fingerless gloves, but I've got a couple different liner gloves. So I'll pull my hands out of the big mitts, you know, do the drawback and shot, hopefully with a lighter glove, but I've been practicing either way, making sure that my grip's set, making sure that everything's right to make a good shot. So when I get in on a muskox, the first time I'm shooting with all this gear isn't at the muskox, because it does change the way that the shot feels, the kind of time that it takes to get that anchor point right, to be looking through the peep right, and to make a good shot. It is actually a little bit tricky, especially if you haven't done it before. And so one of the things that I would suggest, whatever your hunt you're going on, and this is something that I do remember reading, like coming up in bow hunting and not knowing anybody that bow hunted. I got all my information from hunting magazines. And one of the things that they would always talk about was practice shooting in your hunting gear. And I think that still rings true. You know, a lot of people do a lot of their prep for the archery season during the summer. They're shooting in their backyard in shorts and flip-flops and t-shirt. And then they get on their September elk hunt and they've got a jacket on, they've got a bino harness, they've got a hat on, they've got all the stuff, a backpack on potentially. And it makes the shot feel different. Maybe they're hunting and they've got a face mask on, but they never practiced with a face mask. That was one thing that I actually, a mistake that I made a lot. I used to hunt with a face mask all the time and I never really practiced with it. And I would realize that my shots would be like, I didn't anchor the same with the face mask. And so I just stopped using it or pull it down for the shot because I realized that I made way better shots without it. And now I could have probably practiced more with it, but I think that I just decided I don't need the face mask. I'm just going to hunt without it. So for the most part now, I don't really shoot with a face mask on that often, but that is something that you want to consider, whatever it is, especially if it's something different than you're used to hunting, or maybe you've got a late season hunt. You're going to be adding those layers, adding these things. Do those shots ahead of time to know whether your gear interferes with that shot, whether it interferes with your anchor point, whether it makes that arrow go wild or wide, or if something's, you know, slightly unzipped, if your zipper is going to catch the string. I mean, a lot of things can go wrong. A lot of things can go wrong, especially when you're in a situation, you've got an animal in front of you, that adrenaline starts flowing, and you're in a situation that you haven't encountered before, shooting with a pack on, shooting with whatever. One of the things that I think about a lot is, you know, I've seen a lot of different things while guiding or whatever. And one of the things that kind of always comes to mind is somebody that maybe is in bear country and they've got their bow hunting and they've got their bear spray or pistol on the same hand that they draw the bow with. Well, if you're shooting with your pack on and you've got a pistol there, your string could potentially hit, catch, or whatever on whatever's on your waist belt. So when I'm hiking around bow hunting, I've got my water on my, like a hip belt on my right side, or my pistol or whatever on my right side. And if I am rifle hunting, then I kind of switch it over because I carry my rifle on my right shoulder, and then I swap my water bottle to the hip belt on the left side. So, and if you're going back and forth between the two and you don't think about it, that's something that could catch the bowstring and cause a shot to go wrong, or, I mean, could even be dangerous of the string hitting something and doing damage to your bow. So all those little things of paying attention pre-hunt hopefully help during the hunt. And then you're always going to encounter things that you don't expect. You know, this hunt, I'm actually kind of excited for, because I think there's a little bit of an adventure element and just the newness of doing something that I'm not used to doing. One of the things I'm like, I'm not super excited about driving for hours and hours in a snow machine or behind a snow machine in a sled. But I think that it's like also that kind of intriguing, different thing where you're like, this isn't what I'm used to, but yet the people that we're going to be with, this is kind of their everyday. And that's something that I am excited about. You know, there's only so many things you can prep and plan and think about and do ahead of time, right? And those are the things that you try to do. And then the rest of it is kind of the stuff that happens on the fly that you learn and adapt during the hunt or during whatever you're doing. And it doesn't matter whether it's muskox in the north or it's elk in the Rockies or whitetails somewhere else. Whatever you're doing, kind of having that mindset to plan and prepare for it. But then also, you know, there's some aspect of adapting and going with the flow on a particular hunt, because sometimes you don't know what you're going to encounter, but you can just plan to the best of your ability, you know, talk to people that have done it, and then kind of go from there. You know, on this hunt, one of the things it was set up through an outfitter, which is kind of really one of the only ways to do it. You go with native guides, and that's like part of the deal to be able to do a hunt like this. And so for me, someone that does all the planning for 99% of all my hunts and all that stuff, it is one of those things where you go, okay, I get to, it's actually kind of fun, because in a way, being a hunting guide, I was listening to a podcast. It was actually Cam Haynes' podcast with a friend of mine, Cole Kramer. And he was talking about being a hunting guide and then going on a hunt and knowing what it's like from the client position in a way is always a good thing, right? And that's one of the things that I kind of actually really agree with and also feel like I actually kind of lack in some ways is going with other people or other outfits. Probably should do it more often to make mine better, to know what it's like on that receiving end of like, okay, do I feel like I know what I'm getting into? Do I feel like, you know, I've got the right information? Do I feel like this, that, and the other thing, you know, logistics and other stuff? So it's kind of an interesting take. But I mean, for the most part, I think that, you know, whether it's something like this where you're going on a big adventure, the way I look at it is like, it's going to be an adventure. Whether, you know, I think that in my mind, kind of, I've worked out that I don't think the like going up and shooting the muskox is going to be the apex of the trip. I think that's going to be part of the trip. I think like so many other hunts, you're focused on like the stalk and that being the most difficult part to get close. I think of this as more the journey to get there is going to be the part that's the hard part, the like cold weather, the driving on the snow machines for hours, the being in those kind of elements, something, you know, making a shot with all that gear on. And then also, you know, the fact that like a lot of electronic things probably aren't going to work. The fact of thinking, okay, rangefinder, I doubt my range, like I've been on some pretty cold hunts and I haven't got my rangefinders to work very well when it gets really cold. I don't know if it's because the batteries or what, or maybe it's just hard, like in the bright snow, maybe it's hard to see the reticle. There's a lot of things. This is one little trick though that I have found when it's super bright in the snow and you think like your rangefinder's not working, range it. If you've got, now there are some rangefinders that have like a black reticle in there, but if you got the light up reticle, range it and then cover the lens with your hand. So you just put it in the center, do your range buttons, cover the lens with your hand. And oftentimes you don't realize that it's like, it's actually so bright, you can't see the readout, or the readout maybe becomes faint with the cold. I don't really know how that works, but when you cover it up, make it dark, you can see what it is. And that saved me a few times on like instances where it seems like the rangefinder is not working and I covered it up and go, okay, it is actually working. It's getting a range. I just can't read what it says on the screen. So a little nugget thrown in there. But that's one of the things that, you know, for this hunt, I was really preparing myself for as well. So I'm essentially kind of thinking, okay, well, I'm assuming the shots are going to be that 40-yard range. But in that, with a large animal that you haven't seen, that moving in and having that like flat ground, different kind of animal, judging distance, you know, sometimes you go, okay, I don't want to overestimate my ability to judge distance in that kind of terrain with, you never know, those kind of elements and other things. So one of the things that I've been practicing as well is essentially I've got a slider sight. So I'm setting my top pin for 30 and then I'm shooting it at 20 with the 30 pin and shooting it at 40 with the 30 pin and shooting it at all those distances. So I can kind of gauge and then moving it to different ranges and then shooting it those off distances. And the reason is to build out that like, okay, if I'm within this parameter, if I'm guessing the range, but I'm not necessarily, you know, or maybe something out like I can't move the sight, maybe it freezes up and I can't move the sight, whatever. Knowing where my impacts are at those different ranges. And then also knowing like my level of confidence of going, okay, I'm not sure exactly what the range is, but I know that if I aim at this point with the pin set here, I'm still going to hit the vitals and kill zone of this animal out to this yard. So it could be between 20 and 43 yards using my pin set at 33 yards. And I would know that I'm still going to be within the kill zone. And so that was something that I was just playing with a lot as well. And that's also just good stuff to do for whatever you're hunting, right? Think about a bull elk that comes in and you've got your 20-yard pin set. You go, well, okay, where are my holds going to be if he walks off, or the opposite? He walks in closer and now what are my underholds? If you don't have time, you're at full draw. You don't have time to reset. Knowing the flight of that arrow at various distances and then how far off it is at certain distances. So if you go, oh, I've set my pin at 35, I think you walked out to 37. How many inches drop is that? If I put it in, am I still going to hit the kill zone, or is that going to be a miss for me in the vitals? And just knowing those kind of numbers helps you, especially when you're at full draw or you don't have that exact range, but you can still be very effective and efficient because you know your bow so well. One of the little gear things that I'm doing just to kind of for comfort, safety, and survival all simultaneously, you know, in really cold conditions, I do a little trick called that I like to refer to, maybe other people refer to it as like sleeping bag stacking. So I've got a 0-degree bag and a 15-degree bag. So I put my 15-degree bag in my 0-degree bag. That actually does increase the R value of it. On a late season muzzleloader hunt, I think I talked about some of the cold weather considerations and stuff like that. I mean, most of the time I'm in all my clothes in the sleeping bag like that. I cinch up. The big thing is cinching up around the head where you get a lot of heat loss. Then I also have a liner that goes inside. So I'll put a liner inside. So I got a 0-degree bag. It's like a turducken of sleeping bags. It's like a 0-degree bag, Stone Glacier bag with a 15-degree Stone Glacier bag with a, I think it's a 15 or 20 degree added warmth liner. And then worst case scenario, I've got almost like one of those reflective bivvies, you know, like kind of like a space blanket kind of thing. I think it's from a Soul Survive Outdoors Longer. I bought it on Amazon and I thought it was one that I had in the past, which was more of a waterproof bivy cover. This one was more of the one that showed up was more of like a space blanket. But I've used that in the past to add a lot of extra warmth because it kind of blocks any wind and also seems to reflect some heat back in there and doesn't. But the trouble with them is they don't really breathe. So if you're sweating, that's kind of you got to make sure that your bag's venting and other things. But so I got that as kind of a throw over the bag to block some wind. What I really wanted was that breathable bivy kind of thing, because I used to use that all the time on hunts. I just bring like a lighter bag and then throw it inside of that thing, and it increased the R value quite a bit, or at least it felt like it. But that was, you know, I wouldn't bring a tent or anything. I'd just sleep inside that on like bivouac hunts, just going light and fast, mostly early season hunts. But I used to do that a lot. That was like my preferred style of just sleeping bag on the ground and going for it. Now, you know, that's not what you want to do in 50 below, right? You want to have some kind of shelter. Outside of that, having that extra warm bag makes a big difference, you know? And that's one of the things sometimes I'll throw hand warmers in the bottom of that sleeping bag or foot warmers or whatever. And I did bring those down booties that I talked about on that cold winter hunt. So that was a little bit of prep for this hunt in a way, that late season muzzleloader hunt, because we had some real cold temperatures. But when I was on that, I was just thinking, man, we are freezing our asses off here. And that muskox hunt's going to be 20 to 30 degrees colder than this or whatever, what have you. I think, you know, we had maybe some 20 belows or something, but definitely with a wind chill. But yeah, when you're thinking about dropping into those real extreme cold temperatures, you start to think about your gear a lot more and going, okay, well, how's this going to work? And one of the other little tricks that guys had recommended to me was put the bow in the freezer and then shoot it and see what it does, make sure it holds together. I should have done that, but I didn't have freezer space to do it. So I guess that's a good problem to have. Like, I didn't have a freezer that would actually fit my bow. I've got chest freezers, but they're all a little bit smaller. I've got a couple of them. So I started to do that. Well, they were cheaper. And I had one big freezer go out and lost everything. So now it's kind of like a redundant system. So now I got three smaller freezers that are the size of the large freezer. However, I did just get a little Wi-Fi thermometer thing that would notifies you if your freezer drops below a certain temperature. My brother got it for me as a gift. So that should help prevent anything like that where the power goes out or something accidentally gets unplugged. And man, when that happens to you and you live off your elk meat and that was the freezer that goes bad or whatever, your freezer goes out, nothing is more disheartening. So just another little sidebar to the conversation of planning and prepping for a muskox hunt. I think overall, it's one of those things where I'm thinking I'm very excited to go, and I'm actually kind of glad that I was able to talk about it ahead of time and then get to report back on, okay, did it line up with what I was thinking? How did it all go down? I think that'll be a fun way to do these podcasts, because we don't talk about that much, like the intro and the planning and the prepping and the thinking about it phase without the actual experience. So I think that's, for me at least, I've done a lot of different hunts and a lot of them are very similar in a way. So it's fun to be able to go on a hunt where I haven't experienced a hunt like this. I mean, I can guarantee I've never experienced a hunt like this. I've been on a lot of hunts, but nothing where you've got this same style and technique of hunting in this kind of same environment. It's absolutely unique. And so the planning and the thinking about it phase is a lot of fun to kind of go through that and go, okay, well, what am I expecting? What do I have? You know, I've packed up for a lot of different trips, a lot of different hunts. And I'm always on the side of, like, I try to pack pretty light. And I did fit everything in the one bag. Like, I did pack light on this in a way. But one of the things that you always kind of do is you, like, pack what you're afraid of, right? You're like, I'm afraid of losing my toes, so I'm through in more socks than I... Right. So I kind of go through that balance of, like, okay, all right, let's realistically look at this. I mean, for me, I know I've been on cold hunts. I'm going to wear the one set of whatever that I've got, and that's what I'm going to wear. I don't need a bunch of extra shirts and other things. I just need the right amount of layers to be warm. And so that's the one thing. I was like, I probably got one jacket too many, but you get out there, you don't have that jacket and you're freezing the whole time. That makes a big difference. So I think I hit the sweet spot with having enough, not bringing not enough, I guess. And then, you know, there were some things that I normally bring on hunts that I don't think are going to be as important. Like, I don't need a real big pack because we're going to be fairly close to a snow machine or what have you. And I also, you know, there's other, like, I don't think there's not a lot of hike. It's kind of hard to hike around in those giant, that many layers. But I think that there will be some of that. So we'll see. I mean, I'm pretty interested to see how it all goes down. And I'm very excited to kind of report back and share the story of the hunt from the Great White North. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that podcast. Just doing something a little bit different, talking about a hunt before the hunt. And then we'll come back, we'll circle back. I don't know exactly when, but what I'm going to do as soon as I get back from the trip, which will be around, right? I'm actually get back right before this one airs, but there wasn't enough time to have it edited and do all that to get it out on by a Thursday. So by the time you hear this, I will be back and I'll probably be recording the story of how it went down while you're listening to this one. So that'll be fun. But still looking forward to being able to share that with you guys and let you know how the hunt panned out. Hopefully I come back with some success stories, but you know, at this juncture, you don't know, anything can happen. You could go out there, could have bad weather, could not find a muskox, could who knows what, right? Like, that's just part of hunting. So there's always that anticipation and that excitement before a hunt where you go, oh, this is going to be really cool. And you kind of think about how it might go down, but oftentimes it never actually goes down like you're thinking. So it will be fun to be able to come back and report back. One of the things that I did want to mention to you before we go is today, Montana Knife Company does their knife drops on Thursdays. And the easiest way to know what knives are dropping is to get on their email list, just on their website. But I will say that today, one of my favorite knives is dropping. It's the Stone Goat 2.0. It's the Magna Cut. So this is like their speed goat and their Stonewall, kind of best of both worlds combined. I would say that this is my right now go-to blade. Like this one and the Whitetail, I just love the like size and shape is just right. I like everything about these ones. And I know for a fact that the Stone Goat goes fast. Like it's one of those that you want to be online right away for. So I'm really excited about this one. If you guys are interested, you can get more information, Montana Knife Company's website. And I'm just going to say until next week, stay warm. Hopefully you're listening to this podcast from somewhere warm. You can turn up the heater in that truck and think of me freezing out there on the ice. But until next week, stay warm.